97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Sue has a Wednesday edition of Suzu's coming up here in just about 15 minutes. Our friend Alex Rich is in the building this afternoon with us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. I want to talk to you a little bit about last week with Kyle Schwarber, your former teammate, because that was interesting.
Yeah, also, did you notice, by the way, this shirt that I'm wearing? I went back. It was the one you complimented, and I got him in four different colors now.
The one from Lululemon.
Yes. Yeah, well, I thought about, really, I swear to you, I was in the store, and I looked at him, and there weren't any small enough for you in there. There weren't. What are you, a medium?
I'm a medium.
Yeah. Okay. Large was the smallest that they had, and I was going to do a nice thing and get Mark Reardon a gift.
That was nice. That was a nice thought.
You were not.
No, I thought about it.
Really?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
for
I
a
thought,
moment.
You know.
Yeah, you thought better of it, right? So it looks like everyone in this room except for Fred, Fred, you're the outlier, will
Sorry,
be going
Fred.
To the BMW Championship in the next few days, right? Because, yep. Alex, you're going to go. You're a BMW owner, so they sent you tickets. Sue's brother's coming in from Houston, so he's going to take Sue. Fred, we got to get you out there.
Oh, I'll be willing.
Okay. We'll see what we can do for you.
Can't you just tell him who you are?
It should be
he's
that
Fred
way.
Bottenheimer.
Right?
Let's find out, though, from Dave Murray, because I think we have pretty nice weather moving in for this BMW Championship. A little cloudy. I got rained on, Dave, earlier, but it was just drizzle.
That's okay.
Yeah, but
That's
it wasn't
okay.
that bad.
No. No, it and there's another shot of a couple of thunderstorms around as we go through the overnight. Some downpours of rain, but it should move in, move out quickly. And then it's all about the northwest flow.
Well, tell me more about that.
Northwest because, look, flow.
A week ago, we were worried that this was going to be like another low 90s, upper 90s, really, really sticky situation. But I think we're going to get lucky, especially in the first couple of days of the tournament,
no,
right?
You know what? I think we're going to be fine right through the tournament.
Good.
We're talking 83 tomorrow for the high. 88 on Friday, 86 on Saturday, 83 on Sunday. Another weak front will come through sometime Friday evening. There might be a couple of showers or thunderstorms with that, but that moves in and moves out quickly. I think the odds are going to be very, very small on that. But that's why Friday is 88 and then 86, 83 for the weekend. That will just reinforce the northwest flow. It is near perfect, and the course is near perfect, and it's just going to be wonderful. And again, remind everybody who's out of town coming in for this tournament that this is the kind of weather we always have
in August, right? Especially in August. Well, yeah, look, I'll take this summer over a lot of St. Louis.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that was happening today, as you might imagine, they had a lot of rain, and then there was rain overnight. So the greens are not as quick as maybe even the tournament committee would like them. And then I talked to, who was I talking to? I think it was Alex Noren about 17. 17 is an interesting hole. They've elongated the tee box. And, you know, it's a par five that's really hard to reach in two. But he was even saying that, you know, because of the rain, things weren't rolling as quickly. But that course is going to dry out quite a bit in the next 2 days.
Oh,
by Saturday, I'd say.
Yeah, you know they're going to dry it out anyway. It, you know, if they have to restrict some watering, then that's what they're going to do.
Right.
By Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be what Belle Reve is. It will beat you down.
Yeah, those greens.
You're silly.
Those greens.
I wish I knew, Mark.
No bitterness.
Shut up. Yeah. Alex is mad because I've never gotten him out there, and I play Belle Reve quite a bit. So it's on my list to get him out there. But the greens, look, that's what's so frustrating. Like, I was watching Matthew Tkachuk on 18 today, and he didn't even pause. He goes up and he just smashes a drive, and then he hit one out of the rough that was really good. And I was looking at that hole because I did pretty well on it last time. And I think of you, Alex. I do. I think of you often because I know that you can smash the ball kind of like Tkachuk, where you have that hand-eye coordination.
Mm-hmm.
And he does hit pretty long balls. Dave, you probably played out there at Belle Reve over the years.
Many times. Yeah. Many times. Yeah. I love it.
Well,
though it does. It does beat you into the ground, though.
But it's fun. It's fun to, you know, and I know everyone doesn't have this relatability, but when you've played a course like that and then you see it on TV and you know what the players are up against, it's kind of interesting to really, you know, now.
Oh, it's really fun.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there's so many volunteers out there. The kids were having a great time today. A lot of autographs. The players are very, very generous with their time, especially during the practice rounds.
Sure.
So I think we're going to have a great time here. I think they're sold out Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Some tickets available for tomorrow. And we'll talk soon, Dave Murray. Thank you so much.
You got it.
All right.
Enjoy.
That's great. I love that forecast, man. It could be a lot worse. Fred, remember, we got rained on. We did the Reardon Roundtable out there at the PGA Championship. And right when things were kind of wrapping up on the roundtable for our 4 to 6 hours, it started pouring that Friday. And I think they had to pause the tournament for just a little bit, but it was a downpour. And then that's the story of what happened, Alex. I don't know if I ever told you this. So we were doing the show right off the range. It was actually some towers that were
I do remember this.
I think you were there.
Yeah.
So it was between the range and 18, all right? So 18 sort of wraps right there. And these guys are hitting their range balls and stuff like that. And when the pros hit range balls, they're not the balls that we hit at Family Golf or Tower T, right? They got their RFID chips and all that. So I was I kind of wandered in the rain with my rain jacket on, and I was kind of standing out there, and I picked up like 6 or 7 balls. I'm like, I'm just going to. Well, then, and he's not out here. I talked to John McGinnis today. John McGinnis is really great. He's on PGA Tour Radio with my friend Brian Katrick, and Katrick is stuck in the studio this week. He's not going to be here, which I'm disappointed in. But when I told Brian that story, he goes, you know, they donate all those balls to like kids and Evan Scholars and stuff. I'm like, well, I donated them, in fairness, back to another golf course when I hit them. So, but yeah, I did not realize that.
Yeah.
But it's don't steal the range balls is my lesson there. So let's talk about last week, because the Philadelphia Phillies were in town. You're about to be a father. Your wife, Annie, is due on September 12th. But
ooh,
as we've
really
talked about this before, you backed up Kyle Schwarber at the University of Indiana. You know him well. You played golf with him a couple years ago, I know, in a golf tournament. But you got to go out, and there's a picture, I don't know if you saw this, Sue, with Alex and Kyle and Annie, a very pregnant Annie. You got a frame. That's a framer. I love that picture.
Yeah, we got down there, and I texted him that I was gonna be down there and didn't really hear back, but I was like, you know, it's normal, he at least sees
he's
gonna come out. So they happened to actually not be taking batting practice that day that we went to the game, and sure enough, we're like, they're getting ready to like kick all the people that are doing the field visits off the field, and he texts me and he says, hey, I'll be out in 3 minutes. Comes out, stood out there, talked to me for like 15-20 minutes or
That's awesome.
And
that's
it was great. I mean, you could tell people around were, you could, it's funny because people are like, what in the world? Like, how does this dude know arguably one of the best hitters in the big leagues, right?
Yeah.
And he came out and we talked all about, you know, caught up the normal stuff. And he had a few, because he's got 3 kids himself, gave me a little advice on parenting, but we just talked, you know, about life in general and, you know, what was that feeling like being in the home? Like, yes, he's Kyle Schwarber, but also it's like at the same time, what's
guy.
It feel like to be in that home run derby on that stage? Like, what were your parents thinking? Like,
I would
talk
have phrased
about
it this way. How was it getting your ass kicked by Jordan Walker?
Well, I didn't
but
quite
I don't know
say
if the response
it.
Would have been that good for
no,
that.
No, but I tell you what, I asked him, I was like, dude, Jordan Walker, he's like that kid. And he says kid,
well,
which is funny because we're
older player now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're 34, 35, and he and Jordan Walker's, what, 22, 23?
Right.
And he's like, man, that kid can really hit. Like, he's going to be great. But it just made me remember that they are normal guys. Believe it or not, they're normal people, right? Like, just catching up. Like, you remember the Dugan story, the prank calls.
Yes. It's a classic.
I remember the prank call story. I mean,
yes.
he was like, dude, I was waiting to hear Dugan.
Oh my God.
So like he remembered those stories, and you know, we'd room together on the road and stuff like that. It was like, it was cool. It was cool to, I hadn't seen him in a few years. You know, we catch up when he comes to town, but it's been a little bit of time. But it was, I mean, he's still as nice as can be.
You hang in some of that rarefied air because one of your good friends is Vic Oladipo, who made tens of millions in the NBA. But I can offer this as an example, and I'm encouraged by this because Senator Schmidt is kind of that way with me. We've been friends for a long time. He's had this meteoric rise, right? He plays golf with Trump. He was playing golf today with Scottie Scheffler. But he really is a normal guy.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, he and I've seen politicians, I won't name names, Josh Hawley, who have changed over the years and not been the people who they kind of portrayed themselves right. as. And Schmidt's like that. And, you know, even though you got a guy that's making all that money, he's one of the biggest stars in baseball, like you said, he's a dad. He still has regular issues like everyone else.
Right.
And there's relatability there. But I'm glad that he still, you know, talks to you and answers texts and stuff
man.
Like that.
It was it
Because,
was
you
great.
Know, some people don't. They get to a level and then, boom, you're
For
done.
For sure. And I will say, like, you know, there had been maybe last year I tried to meet up and I didn't hear back and I never really think too much about it. It's like, I get it. They're busy.
Stars right. are different.
And he, this year when we were out there last week, he's like, dude, I'm sorry if I hadn't replied or whatever. Like, check this out. He had like 7,000 unread text messages. I'm like,
Alex.
So you had to catch him. He was in the locker room at that time and saw the text like, hey, I'm out on the field, and like immediately replies. It's like, you have to just catch him.
Good timing.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Great timing. So
yeah, that's something I think I forget about my famous friends, that they're getting a whole lot more text messages than,
yeah.
than
Dude,
I am.
What's crazy? So, I mean, then the next night, literally the next night after they leave St. Louis, he goes and plays in that Field of Dreams game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he hit two home runs.
Hits two home runs in that game, and it's like, you know, he's just like the face of... He's literally the face of the baseball graphics on Netflix. So
that's
it's like
crazy.
It is cool. And when you look, honestly, you'll laugh at this. When you looked at the size difference of me and Schwarber in that picture, it's really not that. I mean, he's a big dude, and I am not. But you could tell, like, he's really not as big as a lot of those. Jordan Walker's like 6'6".
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Schwarber's right. not a massive guy. Now, his muscles, I mean... He's a big dude, but when you look at it, you like.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Like he doesn't look.
He doesn't tower.
His
over
legs
you.
Aren't like right. massively huge. When he doesn't tower over me.
Right.
But just a friendly, just a great guy. That's all I
awesome.
Can say about.
It's
him.
Awesome that you still have the relationship after playing together. All right, we're gonna take a break. Alex, you're gonna hang. We got Sue's News coming up.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, we will just hold off on a little bit of audio. We got to cut some slack to Mr. Ethan. I would like to say to all of you, happy National Soft Ice Cream Day.
Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't love it?
Fantastic day.
The best kind, I think, of course, is the swirl. Part chocolate, part vanilla. Fred, do you go all chocolate? I know you're a chocolate man.
I go all chocolate.
What is your thought,
This may
Alan?
Surprise you. I just like vanilla.
Oh, interesting.
I am not a swirl guy.
Not a swirl
no,
guy?
No, I'm really not.
What are your thoughts, Mark?
Don't misinterpret this, but I go both ways.
Well, you know what? I do, too. Here's what I really like. The Dairy Queen, they have a specific kind of crunch that they used to roll it in, and it had sprinkles on it. Oh, I would go vanilla for that.
You know, I think I lived on that in college because they had
Fred.
A soft serve machine.
Yeah.
Oh, in the dorm?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
I loved it.
Yeah.
That's how I gained weight.
Soft serve machine, I think if I could have, like, one novelty, like, I guess let's call it a kitchen
yes,
something.
Appliance-ish.
Appliance-ish, it'd probably be a soft serve machine.
It's a good one.
Well, that's
they
not bad.
They should sell those to consumers.
They really should.
Why don't they?
Well, they don't even work at McDonald's. I figure they don't think it'll work at your house.
They figured that out. But yeah, I got to figure that out.
That's probably get one off of Facebook Marketplace.
What's the place in the stadium that's next to the Champions Club, the 705,
Dude,
right?
I was just going to talk
have
about
soft
this.
Soft serve in there.
And you know what I did last week? I was in there. Put a little soft serve in there, and I put a little brownie in there, and I put a little cookie, little chocolate
you
chip.
You were thinking through it.
Mashed it up a little. Come on.
Delicious. Yeah. Delicious.
It's also National Aviation Day, which is great. There's a history of the Lou on that about St. Louis Aviation. It's a good one if you're interested in that. And we had the first, what do you call it, Fred? Where you direct the...
Flight controller?
Yeah, we had the
air
first
traffic
air traffic controller here in St. Louis.
Really?
It was a guy in a lawn chair, essentially, at Lambert doing it.
Pointing in the sky?
Yes.
Hey,
that was the first one in the whole United States. It's kind of amazing. It's also National Potato Day. So I pulled this because it's kind of funny. It's Jimmy Roulette has a little bit about... the success of the potato.
I was walking by the potato aisle, potato section, as it is,
because there's so many different potatoes. It's not like celery where there's one. Bloop, celery. Like, what happened? Well, how come he's so popular? What happened to the potato? How come we are? Like, he's got his own toy. Come on. That's kind of cocky for a vegetable right there. He's in every aspect of our eating, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Hash browns, tater tots, french fries, potato chips. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You know what I feel bad for? Sweet potato. Oh, yeah, he's got the potato name. Never caught on and became famous. It's like he moved out east, started drinking. Changed his name to Yam, just...
That's pretty good. So, you know what's funny about that? And I think I say this every year because I love sweet potatoes, especially with the marshmallows and the brown sugar. And I'm the one that cooks them for the holidays. And then I always say the same thing. I'm like, why do I just eat sweet potatoes like during the holidays? And I never change. So I probably haven't had sweet potatoes since like Christmas.
Well, that's because you put all that stuff on it.
That's delicious.
Would you like just a sweet potato with butter?
Why?
See, that's it. Or sweet potato why? Fries?
Sweet you get no, I do like sweet potato fries.
Okay.
Yes.
Sweet potato with a little goat. Cheese on it.
Oh, now that is excellent.
I'm okay with
Let
that.
Let me tell you something.
Excellent.
But I mean, the brown sugar and the marshmallow thing, that's like.
But if given the option.
You are fine.
If given the option, I think I like to order sweet potato fries.
That's good. Yeah, that's like positive.
Is there an uglier thing you can buy at the grocery store than a sweet potato?
Uglier?
Aren't they like just all weird sizes? No?
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess so.
They look a little
deformed, odd.
Especially at holiday time because they get so many loaded in there. Mm-hmm. Some of them are like the size of your hand and some are the size of your head.
Right.
Yeah, it's
right.
Odd. On this day in history, 167 years ago, so it's 1859, and the French stuntman, the Great Blondin, crossed Niagara Falls on a tightrope carrying another man on his shoulders. Like you do.
Wow.
Who was the bigger risk taker? The man on the shoulders or
yes.
the tightrope walker?
I don't know. I think the man on the shoulders.
Probably the guy on the shoulders.
Yes.
Yeah. You're putting your trust in the other person.
Yeah, let me tell you something. If there's a little loss of balance there, you're both going down. So
well,
I don't know
that
you're
true.
In a better position.
Yeah, either one is not good. And on this day in history, 117 years ago, gosh, I didn't realize this. It was 1909. When the first race was held at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It has been around that long, 117 years. And then, because I needed music, 59 years ago today in 1967, this song hit number one. Yep, the Beatles. And on the same day, Ringo Starr and his wife Maureen had a baby boy named Jason. So this song hit number one, and Ringo's child was born.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, it's a wait for the actual.
There you go. That's a great song. Strange that the Beatles would have a hit in the 1960s, though.
Is that right?
Very unusual.
It's very odd. All right, you guys, Spirit Airlines went out of business in May this year. Did any of us have any of us flown it, Alex?
I had flown it, and I can see why it went out of business.
Okay, that's fair. Was it, what, a cracker box in the air?
Basically, it was kind of like the seats felt like they were, like, toy. Like, you
Ooh.
Know those arcade games
yes.
where they, like, you sit down in, like, the racing chair, and it kind of, like, it's a little plasticky.
That does not sound comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah, Spirit was kind of like that.
Well, in order to gather information to train its AI models, Google has agreed to pay $10 million for Spirit Airlines' internal data, like the team chats, the emails that to the tune of 100 million emails, flight records, including prices, etc., because Spirit is selling all of this in bankruptcy court. And it's trying to pay off its debt. Its debt is more than $8 million. So Google said, we'll take it, and we're going to use it to train AI.
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
And they're basically clearing the debt, it sounds like, right?
Yep.
Did you say $10 million?
Yep. And they even have a buyer if Google somehow decides not to do it. There's a second person in line or a second company. Huh. And that is the new thing. People are buying info, and that's going to help these people get out of bankruptcy. But there goes your info if you ever flew.
Well,
Right?
We're trusting a failed business to teach our AI. It's concerning.
It is concerning. There was a woman. Well, I can't decide whether to do that. I'm going to run. Let's do this. A new report has analyzed actual data from insurance companies and accident reports to come up with a definitive list of the best and worst drivers by vehicle brand. Here are the results. BMW,
yeah,
Ram,
made the top of the list.
And Tesla have the worst drivers. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Across the country, BMW drivers had nearly 45 incidents per 1,000 drivers throughout the past
year. It's the ultimate driving machine.
That's right.
Let me tell you. You just can't control yourself when you're behind the wheel sometimes.
Tesla is the third worst. Now, on the flip side, Chrysler, Cadillac, and Mercury have the best drivers.
Mercury?
Yeah, Mercury. Lincoln, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Chrysler drivers had 26 incidents per 1,000 drivers nationally. So you can now know what to watch out for on the road. And finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Fewer than 2% of NCAA student athletes go on to the professional level. And NCAA also estimates that the likelihood of even making it from high school sports to NCAA level is about 6%.
Alex and
so good
Kyle
for you,
Schwarber
Alex.
Offer
yeah.
an example of that, right?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. We're coming back. Hang in there. Hanging out in the studio, the Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer is here as usual this afternoon.
How about old Fred Bottomer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
Thank you, Kenny Wallace. Sue Thomas, Alex Rich visits on a Wednesday. So last night, I started the beginning of the new documentary on Netflix about Charles Manson.
Oh, I don't think I can handle it.
Well, I know, and it's tough. It's the Charles Manson tapes, Conversations with a Killer. And look, I have fascination with this because it literally was the best class I ever took in high school. Outside of the class I'm about to mention, I'm not sure I remember any of my other classes in high school outside of my Spanish class because it was my only honors class. But we had a criminology class at Parkway West when I was a senior. And we read Helter Skelter and we learned a lot about the Manson case. And look, whether that happened to me when I was, 17 or 18 or it happened 10 years later, it's a fascinating case, and I can't help myself sometimes on these true crime things. Now, there's a very strong St. Louis connection to this that I'll tell you about in a second, but you started watching it as well,
I did.
Right?
I finished it now.
Oh, you finished it. It's three parts, is that
it's
it?
It's three parts. There's definitely parts of it that are tough to watch. Oof. But it makes you, it really is interesting because I guess he's a serial killer that didn't really kill anybody himself.
Right, because Susan Atkins and Leslie Van Houten and Charles Tex Watson were doing the killings and they were brainwashed by him essentially. But I mean, these were evil, evil things that happened. And you see this in the first part of the first episode, the Tate LaBianca murders. They don't know what's happened. And then they find dead bodies everywhere. And Sharon Tate was a big star at the time and lived with Roman Polanski, who became sort of a defrocked director over the years, but that was, a big couple back then, and it's a crazy, crazy case. Now, one of the things, I don't know, you've seen the whole thing, and I saw the beginning of the first episode, so I know he's featured. There's a guy by the name of Al Wyman, and so you probably know who he is. He worked at Channel 4, he worked at Channel 5, and I don't know if he still works at the Science Center. For a while, Fred, wasn't Al doing some stuff with the Science Center?
Yeah, he was. I don't know
about
on
now. A communications level. But listen to what he did, and this is part of Helter Skelter, and it's really, really crazy. So the cops didn't do this, mind you, Alex, all right?
Uh-huh.
So when the killers left the scene, they threw the bloody clothing out of their car, right? So Al Wyman, being a reporter at KABC in Los Angeles, decides to do this. Hey, how long would it take if I was driving and I'm speeding away from a crime scene, where would that be and where would maybe they dump out the bloody clothes if I'm timing it out? And he's trying to do this a little bit as a math problem to find out how long the killer's escape route took, right? So they timed the drive to match how long it would take someone to drive, strip off bloody clothes, and toss them. At 6 minutes and 20 seconds into the drive, they stop at this wide spot in the road that did not have a guardrail. And they looked over the edge of the hillside down the canyon. They find a pile of dark sweatshirts, t-shirts, and blue jeans that are stained with blood. So as Al's told the story, now this is what's incredible too. They immediately notify the LAPD. They hand it off to the investigators. And the investigators are kind of snobby about it because they weren't the ones who found it.
Sure.
They didn't even treat it as, oh my gosh, this is an incredible. Because, by the way, it was an incredible piece of evidence that they needed. And the cops weren't smart enough to do it.
Wow.
Alan Wyman and his photographer took this trip. And they're like, yeah, here's the bloody clothes, guys. Maybe you guys could have thought of this a little bit.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is an absolute true story. And he shared that. I did a KMOX profile on that, Fred, where he kind of shared that story. But the whole Charles Manson story is just nuts.
Well, the whole thing's crazy. I mean, dude, wait till you get going because you'll see he's like, it's not spoiling anything, but he had like close relationship to the Beach Boys, to like a lot of famous people.
Well, what happened was he was a hanger-on. Right. Mm-hmm. So he went to Brian Wilson's house and he would go to these other celebrities. He played music. I think that was part of his, shtick a little bit. Or I think it was also a passion, something he wanted to do. But these are, and this is what's interesting to me, because these are phone calls that were made. You could tell me maybe a little bit more about this. But when he was in prison, there were 170 phone calls that were made between investigators. And that's where this audio comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty dark. But you can also tell, like, he's just, it's an insane person.
Yeah.
I mean, like, some of the things that he says, it's like, crazy things that normal people don't believe. It's like, he truly believed he was Jesus, right? Like, yeah. I mean, that's like, somebody that doesn't know anything about Charles Manson, I think that's like the best way to describe it, is he had this following and he had people convinced that he was Jesus himself. But it gets into him like doing anything to not die. Wait till you get to like the death penalty stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's like, he was preaching to his people like, we must be okay with death and like all of these things that we're doing. We've accepted that death is certain. And then you get to him, and the sentencing, and they get into like, how he started basically freaking out and was terrified of like the death penalty.
Wow.
Well, I want to watch it because, again, it's just a fascinating piece of, American history in a very, very tragic way. He died, by the way, in 2017. But you still have these situations. And I have mixed feelings about this because, you have Leslie Van Houten and the other woman who have been before the parole board many, many times trying to, say we've come to a realization. I don't think they're insane anymore, but still, these murders were so horrific. I also don't think you let them out of prison.
Right.
Right? Right. So, I don't know if they address that in
this particular
documentary.
Oh, it gets into it at the end for sure. It talks about how many times it went to the parole board. It is just like, the numbers are astronomical.
Oh, you know what? I guess maybe this is something else that's kind of important here, because I think Susan Atkins actually died in prison. So it's Leslie Van Houten. Yeah, Susan Atkins died. So it's really Leslie Van Houten is the only one that's alive.
And somebody got out a few years ago, like several years ago.
I remember this vaguely.
I can't remember exactly who it was. It wasn't like one of the main people that you hear about, but somebody got out. And I think the most intriguing thing is that, like, it has to be embarrassing, right, for these people that have now come to realize, like, they were part of, they call it the Manson family. And they get out, and they're talking to some of these women. Gypsy, I think, is her name, or something. That was what she went by, maybe. And she's, like, a key person in the documentary that's, like, talking to the people that are interviewing her. It's, like, to sit there and... She talks about like her sexual experiences with Charles. It's crazy.
Well, so I had forgotten this, but this is actually Leslie Van Houten was paroled. She was paroled in July of 2023. She served 53 years of a life sentence and was released. The state had previously blocked her recommendations, but a state appeals court ultimately ruled that her decades of rehabilitation, exemplary behavior, and profound remorse warranted her release after Governor Gavin Newsom block was overturned. So everyone else was denied, but she did get out, and she's free right now. And I've heard her. I've heard Leslie Van Houten in interviews. I do believe that she truly is remorseful, and she was in a weird, weird place. But, I mean, those were
brutal
murders.
Yeah. So, you gotta check it out. It's interesting.
Did you watch any of the Idaho murder docs?
I watched all the Idaho.
And those were good, too,
those were
they?
Good. Those were good. I mean, I don't. Is there something that says about you if you like a lot of this murder, you know, mystery type stuff? I mean, like, I love it.
There's nothing
I could watch
no.
it all day. Every day.
Why do you think there's so much content? Because they know that we love this stuff. I'm telling you, I can't get away from it either. So that's why I pressed go on Charles Manson last night.
Now, didn't you have a connection? Was it Ted Bundy? Who you had some sort of you lived on the street or something?
John Wayne Gacy.
John Wayne Gacy.
I lived in Niles, Illinois, which was very close. In fact, I would say it's less than a mile away from where he was arrested when he finally got arrested, John Wayne Gacy. So it was a case that we were all very familiar with, you know, when I grew up in Chicago before I moved here. But yeah, don't put me in the Ted Bundy camp or something like that.
Well,
and then when I moved to Milwaukee, though, this is a true story. It wasn't that long after Dahmer, right? And they were very sensitive. I moved to Milwaukee 1997, very sensitive about getting tagged with all the Jeffrey Dahmer stuff, because that's a creepy story too. All right, Sue, I got something for you. Alex, I'm gonna let you go because I ran into this guy by the name of Jim Epstein, and his company here in St. Louis is kind of amazing. They are called Clearly Better Sense, and he is actually responsible, his company, for scenting, they call this, the merch tent at the BMW Championship.
Love
the story's
it.
Amazing. He's coming up next. So I ran into someone in the hall that I thought would be interesting because I was at the BMW, and Jim Epstein is here and his nephew, and they're entrepreneurs, I guess, because you guys have put together a scent company?
Yes, we have. And we're scenting. When you walk into the Four Seasons, the Ritz-Carlton, or other luxury hotels or med spas or what have you, and it smells great in there, chances are that's us. And we are in the environmental scenting business, and we.
Who knew there was such a thing? See, this is all very educational for me.
It is really a fun business. We're in retail stores and med spas and entertainment venues and all kinds of places because scent is the most profound of your senses. It's sort of like when people tell you to bake cookies when you're trying to sell your house. It's because scent connects, bypasses your front brain and goes to your memory center. And so we've all had that experience where you smell something and all of a sudden you're back in your mom's kitchen when you're 6 years old. So it's enormously impactful. And like we're scenting the PGA. We're at the BMW.
Yeah, so tell me about that. That's one of the things when we were talking in the hallway, you were telling me, and I've been going all this week. So what are you doing in the merch tent?
In the merch tent.
Okay.
So the folks from the PGA stayed at the Four Seasons when they were getting ready to do the Belle Reve thing some years back. And they reached out because we were scenting the Four Seasons and they loved it. So they called us and said, we'd like to scent the merchandise tent. So we work with them to create a signature scent, essentially. And they told us that at that event, because of scenting, they sold 35% more merchandise than they'd ever. Yes, unbelievable.
Wow.
Than they'd ever sold before.
Okay. But so explain, like, when you're asked to do this, this is all new. So what do you do? What did you do in the tent? Explain the process without getting too in the weeds.
So it's really, it's pretty simple. We have a proprietary diffuser that takes this scent oil and breaks it into nano little droplets.
Okay.
And it doesn't take very much. It's sort of like, you know, you get in the elevator, you can smell people's perfume and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, sometimes other stuff too.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we can handle those other smells too. We'll tell you the story about how we're on the cruise ships and we eliminate cigarette smoke. Or so you've been at the Ritz-Carlton here and you can't smell the cigar bar anymore.
That's because of you
guys. That's because of us.
Yeah. So how long has the company been around though?
So it's about 10 years.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now.
So go back to the tent. So you come up with the diffuser and
so
then you came up with a scent.
It hooks into the air conditioning system of the tent. And what happens is there's something called the linger longer effect. It's sort of like if someplace smells bad, you can't wait to get out of there. But if someplace smells good, you will actually underestimate how long you've been in
that interesting.
Spot.
By the way, you guys walked into the building today. Did you smell the dumpsters outside? Because we can use a little help there, Jim. I'm just going to tell you right now.
We have a dumpster program. We
can
absolutely.
Do you?
Well, okay. So everybody's seen these Febreze commercials where they blindfold somebody and take them into the dumpster.
Right.
And they think they're in a meadow. We do that kind of technology, too. And we do that on... That's how you don't smell the cigar bar at the Ritz. That's on a cruise ship. The only place you can smoke is the casino.
Mm-hmm.
Also happens to be the highest revenue per square foot place.
Of course it is.
But everybody who, it's the only place you can smoke on the ship. So even if you're not a gambler, you're going in there to smoke if you're a smoker. And and that cigarette smoke chased everybody out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, with our technology, we're able to eliminate the cigarette smoke, add a nice fragrance, and they paid for a year's worth of scenting on the first cruise because people weren't being chased out of the casinos.
That's crazy.
And so we're on literally every single cruise ship that sails that's an American-owned company.
Okay, so you're describing a lot of like what my wife is in business world, so she like B2B, right?
Yeah.
Business to business. Do you do, like for me, who has cats and dogs and stuff like that, do you have consumer...
We absolutely do.
Okay.
We have a website, clearlybetter.com, and we sell, actually, in spite of doing the Ritz-Carlton and the Four Seasons and all the cruise lines and everything else, our B2C, our consumer business, is actually larger just because
That's
of
awesome.
The reach of the internet.
Yeah.
And so we can make your home smell like a luxury hotel. We can give you an energizing fragrance.
I'm putting you to work, Jim. I'm going to put you to work.
We can eliminate your cat smell.
That's what I want right there.
So anyway, you're in. You've got a friend
customer
in the scenting business.
Now, tell me about your awesome nephew here, because he's part of the business, right?
So Kennedy was, during college, he interned with us and then wrote some papers. And I remember corresponding with your business school.
Where'd you go to school,
advisor?
Kennedy? Where was it?
Southeast Missouri State.
Yeah. Okay, that's awesome.
So anyway, Kennedy was worked for us in the summers as an intern for a few years, and then joined the main company. The scenting mm-hmm. business is a little tiny company compared to the rest of what we do that most people don't know about. We're in the chemical manufacturing business, cleaning chemicals.
Okay.
So
all right, I got you.
Probably have something at your house called Method Household Cleaning
sure.
Products, Leading Green Cleaning.
I love those.
We're the intel inside behind Method.
So that's crazy, too. And that's right here in St. Louis.
I
depend on my Method, you know, soap.
So it's now owned by SC Johnson, but we created all of that chemistry and groundbreaking.
I had no idea.
Really cool. There's a great story there, too. You use Tide Pods?
Of course I do.
Okay, Tide Pods.
Who doesn't use Tide Pods? That's what I would say.
Tide Pods are we didn't invent Tide Pods, but they are a direct descendant of technology that we created for Method when they needed a laundry detergent for Target stores that would compete with Tide and that they could actually make money on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created the first commercially viable 3X concentrate laundry detergent for Method and then got it to 8X concentration. So today, you can't buy Tide in anything less than a 2X concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
That's in response to what we did for Method with this super concentrate laundry detergent. And then the Tide Pod is simply another series of iterations of taking the water out of the laundry detergent.
That's fascinating.
That
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Method is I believe it's my body wash. Not that you need to know that information, but I was just kind of hearkening back to that,
Jim.
Our
sense of smell is really good. We could tell.
Yes, of course
right?
you could. Hey, listen.
We walked by you. Yes.
I'm short on time here. I got to let you go, but I'm so glad I ran into you in the hallway because this is fascinating. I don't think a lot of people are aware of this. And my colleague, Sue Thomas, does something called, she focuses in on local stories, History of the Lou with Sue. And you guys seem to be a really good fit for that, I think. I'm going to recommend that here.
We are in a 100-year-old building in the Cortex, 300,000 square feet, and we are the intel inside behind all kinds of things that you wouldn't necessarily know
Amazing.
If you didn't know us, because we've sort of been under the radar, with the exception of our B2C business with Method or with...
That's awesome.
Clearly better sense.
Well, Jim, congratulations on everything. Jim Epstein, thank you so much for coming in here and spreading a great St. Louis story. I appreciate it.
Mark, this is awesome. Love your energy. Love your show. Thanks for being a St. Louis hometown hero.
I'd say that I'd see you soon, but maybe we'll just smell you soon. We'll just
there
say
you
that.
Go.
Right. All right. Take
All
care.
Right.
Thank you.
Get more at 971talk.com.